So both the mental movies of nonverbal working memory and the self-talk of verbal working memory need to work together in harmony. And we have to be able to pair the images with the words, nonverbal and verbal. And ADHD weakens both of those systems and disconnects them. So instead of saying, here's someone with ADHD who's hyperactive, impulsive, inattentive, kids who can't sit still, kids who can't focus, it's really kids who can't visualize to themselves and kids who don't talk to themselves. And that's what creates the lack of hindsight and foresight. So these kids are literally stuck in the present moment. They're not learning from the past. They're not forecasting into the future. They're stuck in the present moment, which causes them to have tunnel vision towards right now, towards instant gratification. What's the most exciting right now? And that's what causes them to be inattentive. That's what causes them to be hyperactive. It's what causes screen addictions, because they're so big on instant gratification in the moment. They're not really so focused on the past and the future.
And if you want to be a part of the conversation too, then subscribe to my Patreon, www.patreon.com/Mr. Chaz, and join the conversation. Ask your own questions. Be a part of it for as low as $5 a month and get access to one-on-one coaching with me for as low as $20 a month.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching podcast, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your leadership, parenting, or teaching journey. And today we have a great conversation planned for you about ADHD. But before I even get into the conversation, per usual, I will let our guest introduce himself and then we'll jump into it.
Sure. Right. So my name is Michael McLeod. I am an ADHD executive function specialist based out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We have a private practice here. We work with students all across the country and internationally, training staff members at schools and other professionals and parents, and also working with kids one-on-one. We go off of the unique Grow Now model of executive functioning, focusing on internal language and independent skills. I also work with a fellow speech and language pathologist, Carrie Ebert. We do our weekly chapter chat podcasts, and we're very passionate about education reform and bringing back the power of play and bringing back executive functioning. So really focusing on overall executive functioning, which has become a real buzzword recently. And I'm really passionate about educating people on the most recent research on executive functions, because ADHD and EF have a lot of outdated information out there. So the more I can spread information and help others out, that's what I'm really passionate about.
Oh man. So I'm just going to interrupt the flow already a little bit. What are some of those kind of common outdated things, myths that people think about, you know, executive function, ADHD, that aren't true, that you're kind of constantly having to tell people or inform people on?
Oh, of course. Absolutely. So there's a very long list, quite actually.
Yeah.
But overall, ADHD is really a terrible name for ADHD. It's really an incredibly mislabeled diagnosis title. And it really leads people down the wrong path and causes families to pursue ineffective therapies and waste a lot of money and waste a lot of time. But starting number one is ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity. Activity disorder is not an attention disorder. It's not about attention at all, and is definitely not an attention deficit. If anything, these individuals have an abundance of attention and too much attention to give. And it's not an attention disorder, it's a performance disorder. And it's definitely not about hyperactivity and inattentiveness. So in the past, ADHD was really focused on the external and what we were able to see with our eyes. And it was looked at as more of a behavioral based disorder, which is why we have those misleading labels of attention deficit, hyperactivity, inattentiveness. And there was a heavy focus on time management and organization and organizing your backpack and cleaning your room and putting everything into folders. And that's really where executive functioning went down was these kids were put in these executive functioning classes. They were sent to occupational therapy without there being a secondary sensory diagnosis. They were sent to cognitive behavioral therapy. They were sent to speak to psychologists for talk therapy. So it was really based on the external. And this led to the rise of executive function coaching. And that's really a group of non-certified people. There's no certification to become an executive function coach. Anybody can make a website and say, I'm an executive function coach, contact me here. And those people really, sit with the kids while they do their work, hold them accountable, help them organize their papers and create these external systems. But now we know it's the internal skills that are lacking. So there's a big push now to actually change the name of ADHD to EFDD, executive functioning developmental delay. So ADHD is not about attention, not about hyperactivity, not about inattentiveness. It's a developmental delay of the prefrontal cortex, which is the home of executive functions. So it's a 3 to 5 year delay of development of the executive functioning system. So instead of looking at the external skills, we're now looking internally. So we're not looking at hyperactivity, we're looking at self-regulation and the ability to regulate your language, your body, your behavior, your emotions in various environments towards various stimuli. Self-motivation towards non-preferred tasks and delayed gratification. Self-evaluation and being able to learn from past experiences and apply it to the present moment. And then self-awareness, being aware of your environment, being able to perceive your environment, being aware of your emotions and your actions and your behaviors and how they may affect other people. And those core skills of regulation, motivation, evaluation, awareness are all founded upon internal language, which is both nonverbal and verbal working memory. Nonverbal working memory is the visual imagery system of the brain. This is really the core skill of all executive functioning. All executive functioning starts with nonverbal working memory and the visual imagery system of the brain. And this is the skill that truly separates humans from animals, our ability to create mental movies and hold images in mind and re-image the past so we can make healthy and positive choices in the present moment. So we use our hindsight and our foresight with our visual imagery. So we use our hindsight to learn from past experiences to help us be more confident and competent in the present moment so we don't repeat mistakes. And we use our foresight so we can imagine ourselves and visualize ourselves in a different time and space. So we can see ourselves being successful at a non-preferred task. We can see what our room looks like when it's clean. We can see ourselves getting that A on the test so we can study in the moment. So we can see ourselves driving one day so we can go through driver's ed. We can see ourselves getting that college acceptance letter so we can study for the SATs for months and months. So we can see ourselves in the future being successful at non-preferred tasks so we can plan backwards and execute forwards. So that's the foundation of self-motivation, is being able to see ourselves being successful at tasks. And then verbal working memory is the self-talk system, the ability to have an internal dialogue, an internal conversation, an internal system of checks and balances. So having a conversation with my brain, just like I'm talking to you right now with my mouth. So having a silent private conversation with my brain. So both the mental movies of nonverbal working memory and the self-talk of verbal working memory need to work together in harmony. And we have to be able to pair the images with the words, nonverbal and verbal. And ADHD weakens both of those systems and disconnects them. So instead of saying, here's someone with ADHD who's hyperactive, impulsive, inattentive, kids who can't sit still, kids who can't focus, it's really kids who can't visualize to themselves and kids who don't talk to themselves. And that's what creates the lack of hindsight and foresight. So these kids are literally stuck in the present moment. They're not learning from the past. They're not forecasting into the future. They're stuck in the present moment, which causes them to have tunnel vision towards right now, towards instant gratification. What's the most exciting right now? And that's what causes them to be inattentive. That's what causes them to be hyperactive. It's what causes screen addictions, because they're so big on instant gratification in the moment. They're not really so focused on the past and the future.
So the next question is, how do we actually teach these skills? How do we actually help, you know, children with their verbal working memory and their nonverbal working memory? How do we help them with their regulation, evaluation, their awareness, and their motivation. You know, what do we do here? Okay, now that we better understand the problem, what do we do, Mike?
That is an awesome question. And I am so glad. I've talked about this on so many podcasts. I knew that you would come with the good, because you know your stuff, man. I knew you would come with the good questions. That's awesome. So this is a big question I get when I do school trainings, because as you know, schools have to follow the IEP programs. And IEPs are all about data, data, data. And what schools fall apart when it comes to executive functions is it's so hard to track data because of what I just talked about. So executive functioning is basically your imagination when you think about it. It's a fancy word for your imagination, your ability to visualize and talk to yourselves, right? And schools are all about tracking data, tracking grades, tracking scores on standardized tests, tracking data on articulation or words per sentence, or being able to write a story or answer questions after you read a story. Schools are all about data and taking and tests and standard scores and standard deviations. But when you look at executive function tests, there is no true test for executive functions, and there never will be, because you're not going to be able to measure your imagination. So if you look at all the tests for executive functions, it's all informal checklists. Like the BRIEF is the Behavior Rating Inventory of Executive Functions, is a checklist that parents fill out, teachers fill out. There's informal observations. They analyze writing samples. It's a lot of just checklists based on what adults with fully functioning executive function systems, hopefully, of course, observe for the student. But how do we measure executive functions? So the way that we measure it here is we measure executive functions. We look at EF as true independent skills. And individuals with executive dysfunction or ADHD are highly prompt dependent. They need lots of prompts, they need lots of reminders, they need lots of systems created by adults to help them to be successful. So we measure progress and strengthening executive functions as fading prompt dependence and increasing independence. So we measure progress by how many less reminders, how many less visuals, how many less prompts does a student need to initiate the task, persist through the task, complete the task, use their safety plan to not get angry at their friend and get dysregulated, whatever it may be. So fading prompt dependence and increasing independence. So less adult interference, adults step back, kids step up. That's the progress. But in actual therapy, how do we strengthen mental movies and self-talk? That's the core question there. So really what we have to do is number one, it's absolutely not talk therapy, because talk therapy is ineffective for kids with ADHD and it really frustrates them. It's not cognitive behavioral therapy, because that requires you to have self-talk by labeling your thoughts as imagination or real or whatever it may be. But what we do is we do regimented practice of creating mental movies, number one, on past experiences. We'll do a task, we'll go through an activity with a student, then we'll ask them, we'll have a little bit of a delay, ask them to make a mental movie of the activity. And then we use lots of reflexive questions to elicit language about what they see. Sometimes we'll have them draw it. Sometimes we'll have them describe it. But it's really regimented practice of them sitting down, closing their eyes, meditating, do whatever they need to do to practice the mental movie, give them 5-10 minutes to make a mental movie. And we ask a lot of questions to elicit language about what they're seeing. And then what we do here at our office is we'll have them make a mental movie about a certain plan, have them make a plan of something we want to do. So we have a Trader Joe's up the street, a pizza place, a post office, a grocery store. They'll make a mental movie about going to the store, getting everything they need for a recipe, or getting everything they need for the post office, or whatever it may be. And then we create the self-talk to use in the moment. So they make a mental movie of what they think it's going to be like, and we'll record them describing the mental movie and answering the questions. We'll come up with a self-talk plan to use in the moment. And then we'll go and do the actual activity. We'll come back and we'll watch the video of what they visualized, and we'll compare it to reality and how it actually went. And this helps to build mental flexibility. It helps to build confidence and competence. So we really have to get these kids in the habit of making mental movies before they do something. Because this is something that we all do as adults so quickly and instantly. Before we get out of bed in the morning, we have a mental movie of, what it's going to be like when we get up, and how quickly we have to brush our teeth and get our coffee and eat breakfast and get dressed and get out the door by this time, so we avoid traffic and get to work by this time. We all do that in our heads in a matter of seconds, but kids with ADHD aren't doing that at all, which is why they're getting distracted by the closest shiny object in the room, and they're missing the bus, they're missing the car, they're making everybody late, they're causing problems. But we get them in the habit of visualizing and planning for the future and talking to their brain and using their brain coach. That's what helps them to plan, prioritize, and problem solve. So the more success they have in a structured environment with a lot of adult support of making mental movies, talking to their brain, and then being successful at things that were once non-preferred, scary, challenging, outside of their comfort zone, that's how we build confidence and competence and really strengthening those independent skills.
Wow, so many great things there. Okay. First thing, you know, you said that, you know, we kind of create these systems around them, for them. And the way that you measure progress is, you know, as you kind of start taking away some of those systems, those prompts, those systems that we created for children to be successful, the way you measure progress is by, you know, are they still able to do the task, the thing, if we take away one reminder, or, you know, we take away one, you know, alarm, or, you know, something like that? Are they still, how well are they still able to do that task without the systems? Is what I'm hearing. And then you also said, you know, I love the mental movies, creating mental movies of, you know, planning what you're going to do, talk about what you're going to do, plan it out, create that kind of that movie, go do it, and then compare what happened to how you visualized it. And, you know, that really sounds like you're really just creating a story. You're just really creating a narrative that is, that you can rely on in the future to use. You know, that mental movie, that's then going to be your hindsight, and that's going to inform now your, you know, how your foresight next time you have to go to the store or go to school or take a test or and so that is really powerful. But here's my question in that, you know, what if there is, you know, does it ever go awry, right? You talk about it, you talk about, you know, what they think is going to happen, and you go do the thing, and, you know, maybe the thing is completely different than what they expected. And it kind of throws their narrative completely for a loop. You know, does that ever, like, how does that impact the whole mental movie process, whether it goes the way they, you know, thought it went, or the way, if it goes the way that they completely didn't think it was going to go? And how do you kind of navigate that situation so you're kind of still building that hindsight and foresight, that working memory for the child?
Oh man, another awesome question. That's awesome. So first of all, your takeaway from my rant earlier is also perfect, absolutely perfect. I couldn't have had a better response to that. And it made me think of, so there's another speech and language pathologist who's really created a gold standard treatment for executive function. It's Sarah Ward and Christine Jacobson from 360 Thinking and Cognitive Connections. And she talks a lot about mental movies and mind miming and acting things out and those sorts of stuff. And what she does is she calls these mental movies, she calls them a mental dress rehearsal. And that's sort of your takeaway from it, was it's sort of, you create these mental movies to prepare yourselves. And I love how she says that. I love how she calls it a mental dress rehearsal, because that's really what it is. And what we need to teach these kids as they're learning about the power of mental movies is, you know, what goes hand in hand with ADHD, because they're so stuck in the moment and they're not learning from the past and they're not forecasting into the future. What goes hand in hand with ADHD is anxiety, because mm-hmm. every day is like Groundhog Day for them. Every day is the same thing. They're not building any competence. They're not building any confidence, which is why you see them escape into their phone, escape into screens, things they can control. But when we get them in the habit of creating these mental movies and these mental dress rehearsals, we teach them that it's really zero risk of error. You know, they get to the point where they're able to create multiple mental movies and a plan A, a plan B, a plan C, And as they're strengthening their internal self-talk, that's really their brain coach. It's their ability to self-soothe and self-regulate. And that's what we do as adults, because you're talking about, you know, what happens when our predictions go awry and don't go to planned. Really, that's life. That happens to us all the time. And it's so important for us to be prepared for that. You can study for hours and hours and still get an F on a test. You could upset a friend without intentionally meaning to do it. You could fall short of a goal. You could apply to a job and go through several interviews and still not get it. We've all been there. And that's, you know, these are the setbacks and the part things that are the inevitable ups and downs of life. But the ability to talk to your brain and self-soothe and be mentally flexible and self-regulate and regulate your emotions and, you know, be able to look towards a future of new opportunities and look at challenges and look at setbacks and really that growth mindset. And see the positive in getting things wrong. See the positive in things going awry. This is all Dr. Carol Dweck's work from the growth mindset is really, you know, having that mental flexibility where you realize that a mistake is a learning experience or a setback is a learning experience that strengthens you for tomorrow. So, you know, helping them to create more and more mental movies where it's a plan A, a plan B, a plan C. But this is really where that brain coach comes in, where they can talk to their brain when things go awry. So they stay regulated. They stay in the moment. They can take a break if they need to. They can reassess if they need to. And they're having that internal dialogue and keeping themselves calm and focused as they should, you know, as you know, young adults, instead of getting dysregulated and angry and screaming and cursing in a public place kind of stuff, as some kids with ADHD will do. But giving them the internal skills to self-soothe and self-regulate is really goes hand in hand with the mental movies.
So, okay. The self-regulation and it also the self-evaluation, the self-awareness, self-motivation. Are those things you mentioned also kind of talking to the brain, and you mentioned, you know, maybe you watch an actual, like a show, a movie or something, or, and then you ask somebody to read a book and then you kind of ask them about it and kind of have a reflective conversation about kind of what just happened. Does that help with self-regulation, self-evaluation, self-awareness, self-motivation? Like, what are those things that we can do as, and you can put them in different boxes and the same boxes, or, you know, sure, you could just adapt a lot of things, but what are the things that we can do at home or in a classroom to really help with that self-regulation, evaluation, awareness, and motivation? And I'm also thinking about, you know, the teachers, we're talking about mental movies and, you know, teachers when they are trying to do a lesson in middle class with a bunch of other children there, it's kind of hard to, all right, let's stop and let's, you know, before we go do this thing, let's do a mental movie. Like, how do we, you know, how do we do this kind of practically in a classroom or, you know, you're a dad, like in a busy household.
Absolutely. Yeah. So really a lot of this work towards executive functioning can be added to any classroom of any age, elementary, middle, high, college. And it really takes, you know, 5 minutes or less. So instead of the teacher sort of just, you know, starting the class and doing their lecture and following the lecture listen model that we use here in this country, and the teacher just teaching and the students hearing the information for the first time, you know, it doesn't hurt to have a quick 1-3 minute conversation of the students making predictions. You know, what do they think this class is going to look like today? If you get thrown off of your game, what are some things you think you can do? Can you ask to go take a walk? Can you sit with a certain friend? Can you get a drink of water? Can you get a snack? You know, today we're going to be learning about, you know, geometry. What are some things, what are some challenges that may happen today? What are some things you think you may learn? Who do you think you're going to ask for help? How might you feel when you get frustrated? So instead of just starting the class with the teacher lecturing and the kids just having to sit and regulate and listen, you know, have a back and forth conversation where you ask them, you know, very quickly, make a movie of what you think this class is going to look like today. They can, you know, they can go around the room, raise their hands and give examples of what they visualized, what they think they might learn, what they think is going to be frustrating, what they think is going to be cool, what's going to be the high, what's going to be the low. What are some challenges that might come, and have them make a couple of predictions, and then take 2 minutes and then write the predictions on the board or record them, and then take 2 minutes at the end of class to go through the predictions. What was right? What was wrong? What turned out better? What turned out worse? What can we learn for tomorrow? So that's the teacher modeling the growth mindset for the students. You know, that's the teacher putting themselves on the same level as the students, which of course is so rare. But the teacher saying, you know, I thought this was going to happen today. I thought you guys were really going to grasp this concept. I thought you guys were going to struggle with this, but you didn't. I thought you guys were going to really grasp this concept, but you really struggled with it. Maybe I can teach this better tomorrow, or I can teach this better for my next class that's coming. So the teacher putting themselves on the same level as the student by making the predictions themselves, reviewing the predictions, you know, it really only takes about 5-10 minutes beginning and the end of class.
Oh man. You know what too? Whenever I'm about to teach a lesson, you know, I kind of do this mental movie thing myself and kind of think about all the different ways that it can go. And, you know, especially like in a classroom, when you have so many different, you know, personalities and dynamics and situations. And like, you know, this was something I would do, you know, every time, especially if it was a new lesson that I was teaching that I haven't taught before, or in a way that I haven't taught it before. I'm thinking about all the different ways that this could play out and what I'm going to do if things don't go, like, what if they're not interested in it? Or what if a kid gets up and walks away? Or, you know, I'm thinking about these things, and I definitely do feel way more prepared to kind of navigate and kind of, you know, be flexible in those situations. Now, inevitably, things still happen that I don't predict or don't plan, but, you know, just doing the mental movie, just going through that process already kind of puts you in the mode to be flexible. And yep. to, you know, maybe you came up with a plan A and a plan B, but it's, you know, it's easier to come up with a plan C when you've already come up with a plan A and a plan B. So I really, really love this. And, you know, not even just for teaching, but just like, you know, in new situations, going to, you know, speak at a different place or more people than usual, or I'm going to, you know, do a different kind of, you know, I'm going to teach about brain states in a different way. As you're talking, I recognize, like, I do this a lot for myself, and it's really helpful. And so I kind of want to go into, since you mentioned it, and I think we're kind of connected in our mission to kind of improve or reform the education system in America. But I'm interested to know what things you would like, what things do we, you know, first of all, what is already kind of wrong with it, and where are we messing up? And what would you do to kind of, let's say you're the head of education, you have full power, you have dictatorship power. What would you do to change the education system and that to make it work better for children and teachers and everyone involved?
Beautiful. Yeah. Obviously the number one thing is, obviously, I'm very passionate about executive functions and independent skills and life skills. But what we know from all of this research is executive functions are a greater predictor of success than IQ. And the American education system runs on something called the cognitive hypothesis. And it's all about academics, 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 IQ, IQ, IQ. And of course, in this capitalist country, it's led to the rise of Baby Einstein, Kumon, kindergartens now, where kids have to learn letters and numbers and read and write. And we've seen a massive decline, even with the rise of technology, we've seen a massive decline in play and kids learning through play. And now it's really only at some select Montessori schools. And, you know, kids are being asked, young kids are being asked to sit at tables and write and read and, you know, really be mini adults. And you look at what kids are doing in school right now, you know, it's so hard to find a teenager, to find a student who is truly engaged and who's comfortable and feels safe in the school environment. Yeah. Executive functions are developed through varied experiences and interpersonal relationships. Those are the two things that really, really strengthen that prefrontal lobe. And I've hit on it a few times in all of my rants here, is that these kids with ADHD and executive function delays find these little tiny comfort zones that 9 times out of 10, 10 times out of 10 involve screens. So we're talking about video games, phone, computer, whatever it may be, they will escape into the instant gratification world of screens. And now you go to schools across the country, there's MacBooks, there's Chromebooks, no one uses agendas anymore, nobody writes, it's all computers. And every school in the country has problems with kids playing games, watching YouTube videos, no one's socializing during lunch and recess anymore, they're all on their, all on their computers with their headphones in. And you go, you know, after school, drive around your neighborhood, where are the kids on bikes? Where are the kids playing sports? Where are the kids on the playground? They're all sitting in the basement playing Fortnite and Minecraft. So this absolute disappearance of play, disappearance of true relationships, relationships now are on TikTok and Instagram and Discord. And there's these fake online relationships and people aren't getting to know each other face to face anymore and getting to know each other in real life. And that's what's causing, you know, there's no reason now to make mental movies because these screens are doing it for us. And every day looks exactly the same. There's no reason to talk to your brain because every day is the same and I don't need to coach myself through it. So we're not bored anymore. We're not standing in line in the grocery store with our mom. We're not sitting in the car anymore, just looking out the window. We're not sitting on the bus looking out the window. We have our phone right there. We have our computer right there. So kids today don't have to be bored anymore. They're constantly getting instant gratification and stimulation. So these screens are like gambling to young adults. It's really just like a constant slot machine of a constant dopamine drip. And schools, you know, we've had No Child Left Behind. We've had Race to the Top. And we've had all these politicians that don't have a background in child development, that don't have a background in education, that don't really understand what's important for kids to learn. And this whole concept of lecture, listen, where the teacher comes in, lectures, students have to hold it in their brain, then they have to regurgitate it onto a test the following week. And then after the test, they forget all about it. And everything is just based on lecture, listen, holding in the information, and then moving on to the next subject and the next test. So we do far too much testing in this country. There's way too much standardized testing. There's state tests, there's national tests, the SATs, the ACTs, here in Pennsylvania, we have the PSSAs. So there's way too much testing. There's way too many numbers being labeled upon kids. There's way too many standard deviations, standard scores. We're over-testing kids. We're these state tests and these national tests are forcing the teachers to teach to the tests, because the way our country works is the students' scores on the tests are now reflective upon the teachers. So if the class does poorly on the state tests, the teacher's going to get in trouble and the teacher might get fired or go on probation or have to be supervised the following year. So teachers can't be creative. They can't be themselves. They have to teach to the test and focus on the test scores. So we look at how other countries are doing it. Look at Finland, for example. Finland's number one in the world in education because they have true community-based learning. Kids are in the community, learning from workers. Teachers are collaborating with each other. School districts are collaborating with each other instead of competing. Project-based learning. Kids get counseling twice a week. It's mandatory for all kids to get counseling and to have a counselor to talk about their thoughts, their feelings, and their life skills. There's, you know, we have an obvious mental health crisis in this country, especially with teens on social media and things like that. So, you know, getting rid of this cognitive hypothesis, getting rid of this heavy emphasis on testing and grades, the IEP system and the 504 system is incredibly broken, of course, as well, how that's based on testing and scores. But everything needs to go back to how kids truly learn. Kids learn when they're hands-on. Let's get kids in the community. Let's get them involved in the local grocery stores, the local post office, the local carpenters, you know, have them doing more internships and shadows in the community. Have them do more project-based learning. Have them let's have more self-directed learning. It doesn't constantly have to be lecture, test. lecture, lecture, test, and everything go into a GPA and state testing. So that's really what's wrong in this country is, and now parents are super obsessed with participation grades and grades in various classes and missing assignments, and parents are freaking out about their kids having poor executive functioning. But really, it's the system. The system is teaching kids to hate school and not be motivated towards school. And they can't be wait to go home and just be on their games and be alone and not be frustrated by homework. And homework's another problem is there's very little evidence on the benefit of homework. You know, kids need to have free time so they can go out and play and do things. There needs to be more parent coaching to help them create structure in the home around screens and game time and, you know, to have a little bit more authority in the home. But overall, the lecture listen model of America, the cognitive hypothesis of America, the over-testing is really creating an environment that fosters anxiety instead of fostering resilience. So the vast majority of our students are anxious about school, disinterested in school, and it's a product of the system.
So you mentioned, you mentioned community-based learning, internships and going down the community, but you also mentioned project-based learning. And mm-hmm. I don't think that a lot of listeners will necessarily understand what you mean by that, because I mean, we had projects growing up, but I don't think that you necessarily mean the same kind of projects that we had and like the book reports that we had, right? So tell me a little bit more, like what is project-based learning and what would it look like in a school or maybe even at home?
Yeah, so Carrie Ebert and I do our chapter chats where we read our books and we do a podcast for every chapter. So it's like an online book club. We read one book called Most Likely to Succeed, and they also made a really great documentary about it. So definitely check that out. Most Likely to Succeed by Wagner and someone else. And at the end of every chapter, they sort of break down assignments and how to change them from cognitive hypothesis to project-based learning. And some of their ideas were mind-blowing. I wish I had it here with me. But there is one example of instead of, you know, just take learning and taking a test, have the kids start a Facebook page and get engagement from their community and have them, try to do a little bit of a fundraiser to set up an event in the community for people to learn about something else. You're in history class. Instead of just having them memorize the information and take it on a test, have them do a project-based learning where they have to set up a play or a reenactment, or they have to make a video or a movie or a movie trailer of what they learned about, or they have to make have them do a PowerPoint and present it to a different class. There's really the possibilities are truly endless.
Yeah.
In terms of especially with the resources now of social media and the community and the way that you can communicate. With technology now, you can connect your classroom with a classroom in China or a classroom in Europe or something like that. So there's so many different ways to connect people all across the world. You know, you can do a Zoom from your class to Zoom with another class in a different country or a different state. They can set up Facebook pages. They can set up an Instagram. They can go out in the community and learn from people that are truly in that field and shadow other people. But there's, the possibilities are endless, and it really requires the teacher to have leadership. You know, it'd be great if we lived in a country where we respected teachers, in Finland, teachers are on the same level as doctors and lawyers. Here, it's really a lower level job. And like I said before, teachers have to teach to the test. They can't be flexible. They can't be creative. They can't be, they can't use their imaginations because they have to teach to the test. But if teachers can use their imagination, the possibilities are really endless, and you can tailor the education to the individual. Instead of taking this one size fits all approach that we always take, we can see, this kid is a visual learner. This kid's an auditory learner. Okay, have this kid write a rap or write a song about what we're learning. Have this kid make a poster board. When you think about it, grades are really about them understanding the content. Are they understanding the content? It doesn't always have to be Scantrons, multiple choice, short answer paragraph. There's different ways to see that kids understand what you're teaching them. And we have to tailor more towards the individual.
And this is where like the nuance comes in, because in the, you know, in the same podcast, we've been talking about, you know, how important play is and, you know, children are too much on technology. But in the same podcast, we're also talking about how technology is also a powerful tool, you know, for learning as well. And I'm thinking about, you know, project-based learning. You can definitely, you know, every kid wants to be, you know, a YouTuber. And for project-based learning, I think a lot about like, you know, what are they already interested in? Like, where are they already kind of like, you know, being interested? So every kid wants to be a YouTuber nowadays, right? Like, yeah, there's a lot of lessons in that, right? Like, okay, so you want to be a YouTuber, create your YouTube channel, decide what it's going to be about. You have to write copy, you know, write like, you know, what would your website look like if you were doing a YouTube thing? Let's say it was English and like, it was like an English class. You want to teach them about citing their work. You know, there's a lot of conversation that you can have in there in terms of like, you know, copywriting and people taking your work. You know, if it was a math class, you could talk about how, you know, if you wanted to run ads, you would, you know, let's say hypothetically you were going to get, you know, a million views, and for every view it's 0.025 cents, like how much, you know, how much money do you make if you make 3 videos with 3 million views? You know, there's so much that we could do, you know, especially, you know, I understand teachers are hesitant and don't want to like go there, because yeah, there's this whole system of where, okay, I got to teach the test, or like what if it doesn't, you know, even the fear of like, what if it doesn't, like stepping out and doing something new and different? Like, what if they don't get it? What if they learn? What if they don't, you know, ace the test? And, you know, it reflects badly on me. And then, you know, all the other like adults in leadership don't understand what I'm trying to do with this YouTube project. You know, but I think there is, if we really take the time to really see the children and see their interests, and also understand the content that we are, you know, supposed to teach, we can really connect those things and excite children in the classroom, where they, you know, go home and they're still working on it, not because they're necessarily going to be assigned a grade, is because they want to get better. They're interested in it. They see how the lesson is real and relevant to them, but because of the test and the way that we teach, it makes it harder for teachers to teach in a way that's relevant to children, and for children to see how it's, you know, relevant to them, and how, you know, the lessons that they're learning are, go towards things that they want to do, that they're already motivated by.
So you just answered that question better than I did. So that was beautiful. Every single thing you just said, you just gave unbelievable examples. That was perfect. You know, talking about YouTube, talking about podcasts, you know, you should seriously be the Secretary of Education. The ideas that you have, you are such a professional. The information, like I'm being reminded of what drew Carrie and I to you to begin with. You know, your information and your passion for this topic and the ideas you have and your creativity and your energy, you know, that was amazing. You just gave me goosebumps from everything you just described. But that was absolutely beautiful. And you are such an asset and such a legend in this field. And that was beautiful to hear. That was awesome.
I appreciate that. Well, I guess it's time to stop the recording then with that compliment.
That was great. That was really cool. So and all the work that you're doing, you know, everything that you put on your Instagram, everything from education reform to spanking and everything that you talk about, you know, it's incredible. It's unbelievable content. And I love how you're not afraid to speak your mind and talk about difficult topics and talk about hard things and even do a little bit of acting in your videos. But I really love the work that you do, and how great you are and all the content you're putting out there. It's really incredible. So I want to thank you for having me. It's such a privilege to be a guest on your show, and keep doing what you're doing, because, you know, you have one of those voices that needs to be amplified, because everything you're saying is spot on.
Oh, wow. Great. I appreciate it. Well, I only have this podcast episode, so you can compliment me at the end. Now that we can end the record. No, but seriously, thank you so much for coming on. You know, so this podcast has been really great so informational, a lot of practical ideas. And I really encourage people to follow you and Carrie, and your conversations are amazing. I've been able to catch a few, like definitely I'll put links to that in this episode. Any last things you want to say or anything you want to plug before we end the recording?
Yeah. So my organization is Grow Now ADHD. Website is grownowadhd.com. Grow Now ADHD. Instagram is Grow Now ADHD. Facebook, Grow Now ADHD. Definitely shoot me a follow, shoot me a DM if you listened. I love to chat with all the individuals that come across. Carrie Ebert and I are our chapter chat podcast. Just type in Education Chapter Chat on Apple Podcast or Spotify. Definitely check out the website, shoot me a message, shoot me an email, follow me on Instagram, shoot me a DM. I would love to chat with each individual that listened, and hopefully this, sparked your mind on, how broken our education system is and where we should start focusing our passion and our energy. So I would love to chat with any individual who listened, and hopefully we can all keep in touch.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?